हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 41. The king continued, "These seven wild bulls are impossible to tame, O hero. They have defeated many princes, breaking their limbs. If you can subdue them, O descendant of Yadu, you will certainly be the appropriate bridegroom for my daughter. O Lord of Shri." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Upon hearing these terms, the Lord tightened his clothing, expanded himself into seven forms, and easily subdued the bulls." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "Krishna's dividing himself into seven is very significant. It was known to Satya, the daughter of King Nagnajit, that Krishna had already married many other wives, but still she was attached to Krishna. In order to encourage her, Krishna immediately expanded himself into seven. The purport is that Krishna is one, but he has unlimited forms of expansions. He married many thousands of wives, but this does not mean that while he was with one wife, the others were bereft of his association. Krishna could associate with each and every wife by his expansion." Right? So then she already knows that he's already married. So then there may be the anxiety that, you know, she won't be able to spend so much time with him. But by Krishna expanding himself into seven to defeat the bulls, which he could have done as one, but he did it as seven so that she could see that he can expand and do all these different activities. Right? Because yogis, they expand, they all do the same thing. But then you know, so it would be great for doing like a how you say? You know, some dance choreography or something, because then all of you would be doing the same thing, you know, and you could probably get an award because the timing would be so exact, no one could get that close, right? But here's that each one is doing something different, so how he dealt with each bull would be different, right? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Lord Sauri tied up the bulls, whose pride and strength were now broken, and pulled them with ropes, just as a child playfully pulls wooden toy bulls. Then King Nagnajit, pleased and astonished, presented his daughter to Lord Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted this suitable bride in the proper Vedic fashion." The BBT purport mentions, "The word Sadarishim indicates that the lovely princess was a fitting bride for the Lord, because she possessed wonderful transcendental qualities that complemented his." As Srila Jiva Goswami points out, the word Vishmitaha indicates that King Nagajit was certainly astonished at the many extraordinary events suddenly taking place in his life. Right? Krishna shows up, then he defeats the bulls by expanding into seven, right? All the others tried to do it just as one, which he could have done, but he expanded just to please Satya. Right? And so, yeah, things are unique in his life. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The king's wives felt great ecstasy upon attaining Lord Krishna as their dear husband of the royal princess." The king's wives felt the greatest ecstasy upon attaining Lord Krishna as the dear husband of the royal princess.
That means the mother. That means the mother of Satya.
Nagnajit's wives.
Were happy that their daughter got to King Krishna's.
Mother's birthday.
Okay. Okay. And a mood of great festivity arose. Conch shells, horns, drums resounded, along with vocal and instrumental music and the sounds of brahmanas invoking blessings. The joyful men and women adorned themselves with fine clothing and garlands. As the dowry, powerful King Nandajit gave 10,000 cows, 3,000 young maidservants, wearing golden ornaments on their necks and bedecked in fine clothing, 9,000 elephants, 100 times as many chariots as elephants, 100 times as many horses as chariots, and 100 times as many manservants as horses. Serious dowry. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "This system of dowry is still present in India, especially for Kshatriya princes. When a Kshatriya prince is married, at least a dozen maidservants of similar age are given along with the bride. After giving the cows and maidservants, the king enriched the dowry by giving 9,000 elephants and 100 times more chariots than elephants. This means he gave 900,000 chariots, and he gave 100 times more horses than chariots, or 90 million horses, and 100 times more men servants than horses. Royal princes maintain such men servants and maid servants with all provisions, as if they were their own children or family members." Right? So it's not that it's volume, it's that that's just what they could take care of. You know, so that's the whole point, is that whatever is there, one takes care of just like the family. So if one has servants and that, they've taken care of like family. So that's the whole principle. Does that make sense? Yes.
Do you take this fantastic figure as literally or allegorically? Because, you know, it makes about 9 billion people.
Yeah, it just depends upon whether you're a theist or an atheist. It's up to you. However you want to take it.
Do you take it as a manifestation of Krishna's spiritual energy?
Means we take it that this is all possible, yes, by the Lord's grace. And so those who are intelligent, then they take it that this is real. And those who are foolish, or otherwise known as academics, they take it as an allegory. Because the point is nowadays they'll say, no, it's not possible. But the point is in India, they take baths, right? Many times a day. They wash your hands before eating, before everything like that. So they know about cleanliness and stuff like that. Europe, I think, depending on the place, from 30 to 90% of the population died because they didn't know any of this because of the plague. And now those people are going to say what's possible or not, or how many people there would be or not. You know, oh, we have 7 billion people now. But there they had a lot more because they didn't die from plague. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that we have to understand, is if we want to use our mundane brain, and only if it fits into our mundane brain, then we're going to have problems. So that's why then Krishna does these things, just to play with your mundane brain. You know, so he has fun because he throws this out, and then immediately our brain goes, hey, this is not possible. So then we try to, you know, deify it through it. It's an allegory, or it's a metaphor, or it's this or that, or, you know, like arms down to the knees. It literally means down to the knees. If you look at the pictures, they have longer arms. You ever seen that picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wearing that cardigan? Notice where the sleeves come on his arms. They come to here. That means his arms are that much longer than everybody else, because they come down to his knees. It's literal. These are not poetic or allegories or any of these things. They're actually literal. But that's the thing, by his potency. Dwarka is known as 10 miles by 10 miles, but it's unlimited at the same time. So that's what's happening, is that Krishna could take care of all this, and he'll take all this back to Dwarka, and this is just what comes with him, with one wife. Then he has his own armies. Right? And then all the other kings have theirs. So it's unlimited. That's the point. Is that it's the Lord's pastimes, it's the Lord's potencies. That's why we say, on the material platform, we can't understand it, because we're not dealing with the material world. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that if that faith is there, then we can see it, we can understand it. Modern academics, they'll never understand it. They can't. They don't have the intelligence. They have intelligence, but they don't have the intelligence. It's like saying, because I have a Ferrari, therefore I'm a fabulous driver. That's what the modern academics are saying. Because I have a high IQ, therefore I know everything. When in actuality, yeah, they have a high IQ, but what you do with it, that depends on whether you're intelligent or not. That's why we can say they're fools, even though they're, you know, the most intelligent. They don't know how to use it. That's foolish. Right? Does that make sense? You have someone who, let's say, has less money but knows how to properly spend it, invest it, and everything like that. And then you have a guy who has lots of money that has no idea what to do with it, spends it however he likes and this and that. Which one's intelligent, which one's the fool? Right? So even though there's seemingly less, they're actually more intelligent. And the one that has more is actually less intelligent. So the Vedic concept of intelligence is how you use it, not what you have. You know what I'm saying? So we can't mix that up like that. It gives too much trouble. Okay? So the point being made is that they're giving a very, very nice dowry, because then this is going to be what goes with the daughter, because the daughter won't get an inheritance. Right? Because inheritance, you have to wait until the parents die. Right? And so that means the boys have to be patient and wait. And girls, how are their patience? When do they want things?
Now,
that's pretty good. She's being liberal. Doesn't want to get anyone scared, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's why then they get theirs at marriage.
But the boys also get the dowry from the wife's side.
But still, you have to know. You have to be careful on using like that. So, yeah. The Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, "The king of Kosala, his heart melting with affection, had the bride and groom seated in their chariot, and then he sent them off on their way surrounded by a great army." Right. So there's this is the dowry. Then he sends his army just to escort them. When the intolerant kings who had been rival suitors heard what had happened, they tried to stop Lord Krishna on the road as he took his bride home. But just as the bulls had broken the king's strength before, the Yadu warriors broke it now. Arjuna, wielder of the Gandiva bow, was always eager to please his friend Krishna, and thus he drove back those opponents, who were shooting torrents of arrows at the Lord. He did this just as a lion drives away insignificant animals. Lord Devakisuta, the chief of the Yadus, then took his dowry and Satya to Dwarka and continued to live there happily. Yes, so then with all these, so they know, because it's these other suttas, it wasn't that it was just there and it was just this one arrangement, then you don't have to worry so much. But because of this arrangement, all these other kings, they wanted to marry, and they couldn't arrange it. So then when Krishna did arrange it properly, then they all get jealous. And so they come to fight, you know, like we see with Rukmini, then the same thing is there. So it's a standard thing like that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Bhadra was a princess of the Kaikeya kingdom and the daughter of Lord Krishna's paternal aunt, Shrutakirti. The Lord married Bhadra when her brothers, headed by Santardana, offered her to him. Then the Lord married Lakshmana, the daughter of the king of Madra. Krishna appeared alone at her Swayamvar ceremony and took her away, just as Garuda once stole the demigod's nectar. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. The king of Madra was named Brihatsena. Lakshmana was endowed with auspicious marks, Lakshanaihi. The king, according to royal custom, arranged for a Swayamvara, and later, knowing the desires of his daughter, arranged for the impossible piercing of the fish so that Krishna could attain her. It was pierced by Krishna. She accepted him, right? So he would have arranged it in such a way that whoever was there, and then she could see all the different suitors, and then like that, then make a choice. So then it would be something that is someone who is, you know, good and solid could do, or just they're all there and she comes out and sees them all, like we see with Damayanti, when she came out, they all just stood in a line. And then she just went from one to one all the way down the line till she found Nala. So that's there. Or they set a task to say, you know, that there's this prowess or standard to them. But when he understood, when the king understood his daughter's desire to marry Krishna, he set a task that only Krishna could do. Like that. And so then it worked out very nicely.
Maharaj, I think in this Swayamvar there was Karna, there was all the
others. Yes, because this, because these prominent girls, then they're very prominent. Everybody knows in India, so they all come like that. He conquered the kings on the road who had come to oppose him in the battle. By himself, he took her away to Dwarka. So he didn't even come with an army. He just came himself and took her away. So he himself just fought. He defeated them in that. This is described later during the meeting at Kurukshetra. Right? The details were given then. The example of Garuda stealing nectar shows how he alone took her by defeating a host of kings. Right? Because Garuda came alone, and then he just took the nectar. Right? Because they were worried he was there, had it protected very nicely with all these chakras and this and these snakes and all that. And so then, you know, how Garuda and snakes go, you know, so the snakes went away. And then he just became very small, went inside, and then became very big, broke all the all these, you know, different blades and everything like that, and then took the nectar. And so then Indra was not very pleased. And so then he came after him to fight, you know, because he has to do something. Otherwise, his wife's going to, why didn't you go after him? You can't say, well, he's Garuda. You can't defeat him. Still, you know. So he went. And so then, having gone there, he threw his Vajra, which didn't do anything to him. But out of respect for the weapon, because it was given by Vishnu himself, therefore he dropped one feather. Like that. So it's known like that. Just to show that it had some effect. So like that, then that's why the example is given here, that he came and just took the girl like Garuda, and then they all came to fight, you know, the host of kings, and he alone then defeated them. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Krishna also acquired hundreds of other wives equal to these when he killed Bhamasura and freed the beautiful maidens the demon was holding captive. Srila Sanatana Goswami concludes, he acquired thousands of wives who were endowed with qualities like Lakshmana's. They were beautiful. Or, because Lakshmana means all, has all Lakshanas, means that they have different, like Krishna, one of the qualities, I think it's the first quality he gives, is that he has all these auspicious markings. So these are all Lakshanas. So we see Radharani has all the same Lakshanas that match. So then here Lakshmana also had all these nice Lakshanas that matched with that. Therefore she was, you know, her name, Lakshmana. And so like that, then all these other queens, I mean all these other princesses, they also had similar qualities. He also attained many daughters of devatas. This will be described in later chapters. Boma was born from Viraha in the womb of Bhumi, birth. He had great strength. In the Vishnu Purana, Mother Earth says, Yadaham udarita nata tvaya sukara murtina tvatsparsha sambhava putras tadyam maya adayata. O Lord, when you lifted me up from in the form of a boar, by your touch the son was born to me. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. The description of Krishna's marriage with the five girls mentioned in this chapter is not sufficient. He had many other thousands of wives besides them. Krishna accepted the other thousands of wives after killing a demon named Bhamasura. All these thousands of girls were held captive in the palace of Bhamasura, and Krishna released them and married them. Conclusion. The Lord can be pleased only by a humble attitude in the service spirit. Right, so that's how we can understand. That's the difficulty, is that if we just use intelligence, then we're not dealing with humility and service. Right? It's because I have controlled the thing by analyzing it. And because I've analyzed it, therefore, that's how it works. Right? But it's because of my intelligence, I control the material energy. You can say, no, but modern science, they're doing so many things. Yeah, and then the hurricane comes along. What happens to all that? You understand? No, but we're working on it too, being able to figure out this and that, and then something else that they haven't figured out yet happens. So that's the whole thing, is that because they don't have this humble attitude and service spirits, they can't understand, even though they have so much qualification. So that's the point. Material knowledge, skill, and other qualifications aren't enough to know the Lord. That's very, very important. Why does this have to be said? Because one of the tendencies, the neophyte devotee thinks, because of my knowledge and skills, that's why I'm advanced. I'm more intelligent than the others, or I have more experience, or I am older, or I have, you know, I can do things that others can't do. That's what makes me more advanced. But we have to be careful of that. That's not actually the point. The point is faith in the scriptures, right? That's the basis of sadhana bhakti. And then our faith as it in the Lord, from there, as it develops, this is our advancement. But otherwise, if we don't have faith in scripture, how can we be situated in sadhana bhakti? If we're not situated in sadhana bhakti, how will we develop prema? Does that make sense? So that's why that process is there. So we see Krishna does things very nicely, but also Krishna does things also in different unique ways, just to show his independence. Otherwise we'll say, no, but he has to do it like that. But that means that he's not independent. Right? He follows scripture, but at the same time he's the source of the scripture. So, yeah. Receiving Krishna, the Pandavas were enlivened, just as if wakened from unconsciousness or loss of life. In the same way, when one sees Krishna in full Krishna consciousness, one immediately becomes free from all material anxieties and is blessed with all spiritual bliss. To attain Krishna, this one requires determination and the mercy of devotees. The girl Yamuna was very determined in her vows to attain Krishna, and she knew it well that Arjuna was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, and if he would pray, Krishna would never deny his request. To approach Krishna directly may sometimes be futile, but to approach Krishna through his devotees is sure to be successful. Thus, determination in following her duties and the mercy of the devotees assured Yamuna's success. Right, so that's why you have to have that service attitude and that humility. So we follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and we apply that in our own life with that focus and that determination. Right? So we see here, practically, that's why the stories are given in the Puranas, because then we see how it worked. Does that make sense? That it actually works. Satya thought that the Supreme Personality of Godhead could be pleased only out of his own causeless mercy upon the devotee. Otherwise, there was no means to please him. The Lord can be pleased only by a humble attitude in the service spirit. The more we render service unto the Lord under the direction of the devotees, the more we make advancement on the path approaching the Lord. We cannot demand any grace or mercy from the Lord because of our service rendered to Him. He may accept or not accept our service. But the only means to satisfy the Lord is through the service attitude and nothing else. So, we perform our service with that full faith that it's only by the Lord's mercy you can get, but he says it's through devotional service that we will get bhakti. We'll get that devotion. Does that make sense? So we perform our service without expecting, because I'm doing it, but we have that full faith that we will get the Lord's mercy by this process. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to balance these two. So there's no, I've done devotional service, why is this happening to me? But that means that wasn't devotional service, that was karma. Connected to the Lord, but it was karma, because I did this for this purpose. Does that make sense? So that's we can't have that. At the same time, it's, oh no, but he's independent, maybe he won't give his mercy. Then we'll turn to someone else. No, it's he only who gives the mercy, but it's not because you've done the activity. It's by the bhakti itself attracts him. So the activity we perform is the medium we use to express the devotion. So that's the whole point. Is that the expression of the devotion, that if we do that in line with the acharyas, then by the grace of the acharyas, then we get Krishna's mercy. Okay. Chapter 59, The Killing of Narakasura. Pratigya. By sincere service, one attains the mercy of Krishna. And by and by pride, one becomes Krishna's enemy. So that's where it comes up. So we see someone is proud, he becomes Krishna's enemy, because then he's trying to present himself as something special. But if they become humble, then they become they get Krishna's mercy. So it's not what one's done, it's actually the attitude. That's the whole point. So the difficulty, like we were saying before, with those who are intelligent and have great material skills, then they become proud. That's the problem. Shishupal was proud. Jarasandha's proud. Rukmi was proud. Therefore, it doesn't work out very good for them. But you see then the devotees, Lakshmana, Satya, them, they have that humble attitude. Therefore, then they get Krishna's mercy. Does this make sense? Chapter 59 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Brigat asks Srila Sukadeva Goswami question 1030 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 1059.1. How is Bhaumasura, who kidnapped so many women, killed by the Supreme Lord? Please narrate this adventure of Lord Shangadanvas. Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers the question in the first half of the chapter, Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter tells how Lord Krishna killed Narakasura, the son of the earth goddess, and married the thousands of maidens the demon had kidnapped. It also describes how the Lord stole the Parijata tree from heaven and how he behaved like an ordinary householder in each of his palaces. So that means Narakasura and Bhaumasura are the same, just different names for it. Okay. After Narakasura stole Lord Varuna's umbrella, Mother Aditi's earrings, and the playground of the demigods known as Maniparvata, Indra went to Dwarka and described the demon's transgressions to Lord Krishna. Together with Queen Satyabhama, the Lord mounted his carrier Garuda and traveled to the capital of Narakasura's kingdom. On a field outside the city, he decapitated the demon Mura with his disc. Then he fought Mura's seven sons and sent them all to the abode of death, after which Narakasura himself entered the battlefield on the back of an elephant. Naraka threw his Shakti lance at Sri Krishna, but the weapon proved ineffective, and the Lord cut the demon's entire army to pieces. Finally, with his sharp-edged disc, Krishna cut off Narakasura's head. The earth goddess, Prithvi, then approached Lord Krishna and gave him the various items Narakasura had stolen. She offered prayers to the Lord and presented Naraka's frightened son at Lord Krishna's lotus feet. After pacifying the demon's son, Krishna entered Narakasura's palace, where he found 16,100 young women. As soon as they caught sight of the Lord, they all decided to accept him as their husband. The Lord sent them to Dwarka along with a great quantity of treasure, and then went with Queen Satyabhama to the abode of Indra. There he returned Aditi's earrings, and Indra and his wife Satyadevi worshipped him. At Satyabhama's request, Lord Krishna uprooted the heavenly Parijata tree and put it on the back of Garuda. After defeating Indra and the other demigods who opposed his taking of the tree, Krishna returned with Queen Satyabhama to Dwarka, where he planted it in a garden adjacent to Satyabhama's palace. Indra had originally come to Lord Krishna offering obeisances and begging him to kill Narakasura. But afterwards, when his business had been accomplished, he quarreled with the Lord. The demigods are prone to anger because they become intoxicated with pride in their opulences. That's the whole point. The pride is there because they are qualified. That's the whole point, is they are qualified. So people who have material qualification, they become proud of that. And because of that, then they oppose the Lord. So when Indra is humble, then he approaches the Lord. But then he becomes proud. And then now he fights with the Lord. So that's the position. So this pride or this humility, that makes the difference on then how you approach the Lord. So one has to be very careful with that. Yes?
So we want to become qualified in Krishna's service. It's a natural tendency of development.
Yes.
However, we see that the pride is growing also. So how to avoid the pride but still become qualified in Krishna's service?
Yes. Means you have the aspects of using this knowledge of of Krishna's position, our position. That we understand that he is the strength of the strong, or the intelligent of the intelligent, or whatever it is, the quality that we have that we may become proud of, is the working ingredient of that is Krishna. So actually we're only an instrument. We're not actually the doer here. It's just Krishna's making it happen. If we identify with it and then say it's ours, then that's the problem. Because at any point these things can go away. Someone's in a very prominent position. Any moment it can just go. Right? So that would prove as we're not the doers. Otherwise, then it would always remain. Because that, you know, yes, he elevated himself to that position. He did this, he did that. But then when it all falls apart, it'll just be bad luck. You know? So that means then if that's the case, then luck is more powerful than his endeavors. Because whatever he endeavored, then luck overturned that. So that means the prowess of the Lord, the potency of the Lord, the laws of nature are more powerful. So then we understand is no, we can just take part as an instrument. So if we see that as an instrument, then it's not us doing. We're simply trying to do our best to please Krishna, engaging whatever we have. Therefore, in success or failure, we're still fixed in service to the Lord, because it's not us doing. We're only trying to engage. Does that make sense? While if we think I'm the doer, when it's going well, then we'll be encouraged, and we're the great devotee, and then when it doesn't go, then either we're so useless, or something's wrong with Krishna, or both, or, you know, however, whatever is our flavor of the day. You know, so it'll go like that. Somebody says, so the only way is that we see ourselves as instrument, then we can maintain that steadiness. Then you can be super intelligent and use it all in connection with Krishna. You know, so we see the acharyas, they're very intelligent. They're more intelligent than the scholars. But they don't present themselves in that way. Does that make sense? So you see that pastime where Jiva Goswami then defeated that pundit that Rupa Goswami didn't even want to bother arguing with. So then he mentioned to him that you haven't really understood the principle of sannyas. Because sannyas means it's about the Lord, so what purpose is this here? It means he was defending his guru, so in that way then that's the authorized point. But the point being made is that these kind of people we don't get involved in. We don't have to prove ourselves to them. That's the whole point, is Krishna consciousness doesn't have to be proved to the modern intellectuals, because it goes on without them. Like that. That doesn't matter. The scriptures are there, people can follow them, whether the intellectuals understand or not. Now, if the intellectual appreciates it and practices it himself, he'll get the benefit. But he's doing that as an individual, not as an intellectual, because he's not an intellectual. He's the jiva, and his conditioned nature happens to have you know, a good volume of intelligence. But they're still not that. So as long as they identify with that, that will keep them on the neophyte platform, therefore pride, therefore all these other difficulties come up. And so then they won't be able to advance very nicely. Does that make sense? Because this idea will prove ourselves within their field. You can't prove anything within their field. Their field is about defeating all previous authority. That's what it's about, and making yourself the authority. You know, it's a real dog eat dog kind of thing. Smart dogs, but you know, how you say, yeah, like that. So, but that's the whole thing. It's about defeating everyone before and establishing yourself. So you can't. Because the point is the Shastra is eternal, Krishna is eternal, devotional service is eternal. So the only place of it being established is in the eternal realm. That's within devotional service. On this idea that we need to establish and be recognized in the material field, we don't actually at all. Not at all. Because it keeps changing. Whatever they accept today, tomorrow they throw out. So why get involved with such people? Does that make sense? There's no need. But this idea is you'll feel better if they accept, or, you know, then we'll be able to spread so nicely. No. We just do our own thing, because we say it's about them. But the problem is the point, people that are prominent are the ones that generally oppose the system. Because the system's about breaking it down. Does that make sense? It's just like we have, Druta Karma and Satyaraj. No, Sataputta. They were opposing the modern, you know, theories. And they were famous. You know, they were considered, at least in the western half of America, as the authorities in their field and not the academics. But there basically wasn't any academic that liked them. Or like someone like Svoboda, and I can't remember who the other guys was. Svoboda? Anyone knows? It's someone else. They're both professors. They're both academics. But, you know, and they're well respected. Their books and all that. So within the world of Vedic world, they're respected. But in the academic world, they don't speak nicely at all. Even devotee academics won't speak nicely about them. Because they don't toe the line. So the whole point is what's the use? What's the point? Why put your invest in a field that you can't establish anything anyway? Because the point is you have to make an academic a devotee by being a devotee. Right? So the academic you have to forget that. You have to approach him as a soul who can be a devotee. Because as an academic, he can't be a devotee. It's not allowed. You know, it's just the way it is. So therefore, that's why we see is we don't worry about these things. So this pride, all these things. So that's this. So Mayaya Pratijnana, that's one. That's why we call them fools, because that's what Shastra says. Right? Then the Asuras, because of their power, then they become proud. Right? The Naradhamas, they become proud because, you know, their wealth, their sophistication, their, you know, position in society, they become very proud. And the Muda, you know, just whatever little skill he has that, you know, he's got more tattoos than the other guy, or, you know, he can lift more bales of cotton than the other guy, or, you know, whatever is his truck. His garbage truck is bigger than the other guy's garbage truck. You know, you're driving one of those little things in the mall that picks up the dust. We drive the big monster garbage truck, you know. So they have their ways to be proud. So if anybody maintains this pride, they can't surrender. That's why they're classified as the ones who don't surrender. Because the point is it's not that they don't know about Krishna and they're distracted by knowledge and power like that. The ones who surrender are also. Jigyasu means they're bewildered by jnana. But they're willing to approach the Lord for that. Well, the Mayaya Pratijnana is not. Does that make sense? You know, that he's, you know, I say, Arta, the Muda, that's what, you know, the common person means, he laments. And so, when he laments and he loses that pride, he surrenders to Krishna. Right? When his material facilities don't go so well and all that, then Naradama surrenders to Krishna. Right? Then the Jigyasa, they surrender to Krishna. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's what happens. It's just, that's the difference. They're proud or they're not. That's how it goes. So this whole idea is that we're going to take on their pride and that's going to make devotional service so much better. Where does it ever, where is that coming from? It comes from ourselves. Because they say, because we're the best. And so if we're one of them, then we're the best. But why do we have to? That means we're dependent. Brahman means independent. We're not worried about it. Does that make sense? Doesn't mean that we don't know how to socially interact and all that, and use our intelligence. But it means it's not dependent upon them. Does that make sense? So our telling them that they're very intelligent is not because we need to and that way we'll feel better or they'll accept us more. It's because they're so proud that unless they hear, they can't function. So therefore, like that, then they'll relax and you can tell them about Krishna and then they take up devotional service. So it's just a method. Because we're humble, what do we care? So, does that make sense? Yeah. The infallible Supreme Lord manifested himself in 16,100 separate forms and married each of the 16,100 brides in a different temple. That means there were that many temples, right? He took up the required activities of household life just like an ordinary person, accepting various kinds of service from each of his many wives. Yeah, so he went back and did that. So he sent them back. He didn't take them back. Like you see, all the other queens, he went back with them. Like that. But why didn't he go back with the 16,100 queens, our princes?
Because
Satyabhama was there. You send them back. Because that he'll do with that, because he'll be with Satyabhama, and he'll be simultaneously marrying all the other queens. You understand? So, therefore, it's like that. What we have to see is that in this one, it has a difference because Satyabhama's there. Like that. How he's dealing in Indra. Otherwise, he would have gone there, they would have offered their prayers, this and that, formal, then he would have got on Garuda and flown off. Right? But Satyabhama's there. It's like, you know, hey, it's a nice tree. You know? Like that. So for Krishna, it creates wonderful pastimes. Right? And then we have the reflection. I'll let everybody fill in the dots as appropriate. So when we connect it to Krishna, then it becomes wonderful. But it's the connection to Krishna that makes it special. Otherwise, it's only... Yes. Summary of verses. 1 to 22, Krishna slays Narakasura. 23 to 31, prayers by Goddess Bhumi. 32 to 37, Krishna accepts 16,100 maidens abducted by Narakasura. Okay. Sincerely and seriously, they offer their hearts to the lotus feet of Krishna with an unalloyed devotional attitude. As the super soul in everyone's heart, Krishna can understand their uncontaminated desire, and he agreed to accept them as his wives. Right? So that sincere, unalloyed service attitude, that's what attracted Krishna. Right? That's the point we're getting across in this chapter. Right? That's why it attracted them. So as we see before, though, there was other aspects being brought out, but they had that same sincere aspect. 38 to 41. Krishna steals the Parijata trees from Swarga Loka. So then the point being made, too much wealth makes a man selfish and obstructs his advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right? So he took the Parijata because Indra is becoming too proud, because otherwise he'd be very happy if he's not proud, and then that's a nice thing he takes and all that, because it's Krishna. It's there in his place. And he could just, you know, I think he did request anyway that after his pastimes it would come back to the heavenly planets. But he could have done that in the first place instead of fighting. You know, since it doesn't belong there, people misuse and like this, and that's how it normally is. It's there, but you please have it while it's there, or anything else you'd like, and that, and so then, but he doesn't. Right? So it gets in the way of his Krishna consciousness, right? He's fighting with Krishna. You're not exactly... you know, what we call in best Krishna consciousness. He's conscious of Krishna, but not favorably, right? So for a devotee to take on, you know, enmity and that with the Lord, that's not advisable. Demons can do it, but devotees, they don't. In verses 42 to 45, Krishna's conduct as an ordinary householder. By expanding himself into 16,100 forms and simultaneously marrying them all in different places at the same auspicious moment, right? That means Krishna established the truth that he and no one else is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's established he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why is that? Because he can do this. Because what if he didn't do this? Then the others would be wondering what's happening, this, that. You have the marriage, the girl's absorbed in her own marriage, it's an auspicious time. Not that the others got a different auspicious time, so is there a time more auspicious, or is it less auspicious? Because if it's more, then why did that happen? Why didn't I get the more auspicious? And if it's less, then just see, I'm better. So all to avoid all that, he married all of them at the same time. So now all of them can, you know, live peacefully together. Verses 1 to 22. Krishna slays Narakasura. King Parikit said, how was Bhaumasura, who kidnapped so many women, killed by the Supreme Lord? Please narrate this adventure of Lord Shangadanvas. Srila Sukadev Goswami said, after Bhauma had stolen the earrings belonging to Indra's mother, along with Varuna's umbrella and the demigod's playground at the peak of Mandara Mountain, Indra went to Lord Krishna and informed him of these misdeeds. The Lord, taking his wife Satyabhama with him, then rode on Garuda to Pragyotisha Shapura, Pragyotishapura, which was surrounded on all sides by fortifications consisting of hills. Okay, so you have hills all the way around nicely, and then there, so then they have their fortifications, and then it makes it very nice. So many places where you see they have this kind of fortification, then they're very, like Jaipur has fortifications like that. It was never conquered. So it's a very, considered a very good one. The palace is on a hill, but also you use the hills around that as the fortifications. Okay. I think even the wall of China is built on the top of the hills. And it was surrounded outside by fortifications consisting of hills, unmanned weapons, so they already had back then, water, fire, and wind, and by obstructions of Murapasha wire. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, to enter the city of Jyotisha, oh, that's why there's a J here, there's not that one, okay, was not a very easy task because it was very well fortified. First of all, there were four strongholds guarding the four directions of the city, which was well protected on all sides by formidable military strength. The next boundary was a water canal all around the city. In addition, the whole city was surrounded by electric wires. So that's Murapasha. So these are, see, the demons get into all these mechanical things, unmanned weapons, you know, electric wire, all these different kinds of stuff. You know, that's their, what they're doing. So now the days are saying, oh, see, they're technologically advancing. They didn't have these before. Because before, humans didn't care about these things, only the demons. But now as they take on more atheistic, then these come up, and then now it's all the new stuff that they had, they already had before. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that modern things are simply because the mentality, these things come up. Otherwise, before, who would want that? You know, in other words, before they would rather ride a horse than a machine that has a horse on as a logo. You understand? That's the whole point. It's so much nicer. Right? But nowadays they'd rather have the, you know, the machine with the horse logo on it. But it's interesting. Those who are rich might have the Ferrari, but those who are really rich have horses. Like that. There's
in addition to the
Ferrari. Yeah, of course, like that. But there's even in London, there's a particular road that goes through the main inner part of the city that's just for horses. So the mounted police go on that, but anybody else who has horses can ride it on there. As long as they, you know, behave themselves and dress properly and all that. You know. So in other words, probably a Texan couldn't go riding on there with his horse. But yeah. So. The next fortification was anila, a gaseous substance, right? So after this there was a network of barbed wire constructed by a demon named Mura. The city appeared well protected, even in terms of today's scientific advancements. Right? They would definitely think that this is, you know, good. The BBT Purport mentions, the Acharyas have explained in various plausible ways why Lord Krishna took his wife Satyabhama with him. Srila Sridhar Swami begins by saying that the Lord wanted to give his adventurous wife a novel experience, and thus took her to the scene of this extraordinary battle. Also, Lord Krishna had once granted the blessings to Bhumi, the earth goddess, that he would not kill her demoniac son without her permission. Since Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama, the latter could authorize Krishna to do the needful with the unusually nasty Bhaumasura. Because if Satyabhama is there and she says kill him, then what can her expansion say? Right? Finally, Satyabhama had been miffed when Narad Muni brought a celestial Parijata flower to Queen Rukmini. To pacify Satyabhama, Lord Krishna had promised her, I'll give you a whole tree of these flowers. Yes. And thus the Lord scheduled this procurement of a heavenly tree within his itinerary. Because then fighting with Balmasura, then they could go to the heavenly planets, then they could get. Otherwise they just show up. Then it looks like he just came and took the Parijata flower. But because he did work for the demigods, then he goes there, then it should be there happy with it and give him gifts. But instead they don't, they fight with him. Right? You know. Even nowadays, devoted husbands take their wives shopping, and thus Lord Krishna took Satyabhama to the heavenly planets to get a heavenly tree, as well as to retrieve the goods Balmasura had stolen and return them to their rightful owners. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti notes that in the heat of battle, Queen Satyabhama would naturally become anxious for Lord Krishna's safety and pray for the battle to end. Thus she would readily give permission to Krishna to kill the son of her expansion, Bhumi. So all these things are all going on. So all of these is not that it's one or the other, it's all of them together. And so all of them together very nicely, then it has this pastime. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, having her accompanying him was also indicates disregard for Bulma's ferocity. Right? You come to the battle and bring your wife, you know, so it's like, you know, it can't be that bad, right? She'll go with me to battle and then desire the Parijata tree, which I will bring back. I will derive pleasure when Rukmini desires it. It is not that I desire to fight with Bauma. This is how he felt in all the battles with demons. Right? In other words, it wasn't a big deal. He just goes and has fun up to whatever point. Because no matter how big they are, they're not unlimited. They're greater than us. Therefore, it's such a great battle. But as far as considered the Lord, then it's not. So, you know, if it's a big, you know, they give good effort. Then you know, it becomes pleasing. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, with his club, the Lord broke through the rock fortifications. With his arrows, the weapon fortifications. With his disc, the fire, water, and wind fortifications. Right, because the wind was all the gas. And with his sword, the Murapasha cables. With the sound of his conch shell, Lord Gadadhara then shattered the magic seals of the fortress, along with the hearts of its brave defenders. And with his heavy club, he demolished the surrounding earthen ramparts. Right, so that's why you blow the conch, it removes all inauspiciousness. So all these magic spells, but just by his conch, then they're removed. The five-headed Mura demon, who slept at the bottom of the city's moat, awoke and rose up out of the water when he heard the vibration of Lord Krishna's Panchajana conch shell, a sound as terrifying as the thunder at the end of the cosmic age. So that means he slept through everything else. Right? Footnote 20. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, Mura was sleeping because he was always drowsy with intoxication and was always without thoughts, being unconquerable by weapons. That was his nature. Right, so, yeah. So because of his position and what he could arrange, then he was just intoxicated and didn't worry about it. But now, hearing the Lord's conch shell, he had to be worried about it. Shining with the blinding, terrible effulgence of the sun's fire at the end of a millennium, Mura seemed to be swallowing up the three worlds with his five mouths. He lifted up his trident and fell upon Garuda, the son of Tarksha, like an attacking snake. Mura whirled his trident and then hurled it fiercely at Garuda, roaring from all five mouths. The sound filled the earth and sky, all directions and the limits of outer space, until it reverberated against the very shell of the universe. So that's a serious roaring, right? Like that. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, the roar filled the whole universe, including the heavens and earth. Instead of Ambaram, sometimes Antaram is seen. This means Patala. Since sound arises in ether, the sound went to the five upper planets, including Svarga, since the space was large and went upwards, right? Because sound goes up. Not able to leave the universe, the sound returned down to earth and then expanded in all out directions. Then, after filling everything above, it entered a hole into the lower planets. Thus, the sound gradually filled the universe completely. So, it went, expanded, it covered all the heavenly planets, and that bounced off the inner part of the universe, and then came back down, went throughout the whole of the earth, and then went below to all the hellish planets. Like that. So that way the whole universe, you could hear his roaring. That's serious roaring. And here with Mura's roaring. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.